yourselves.
Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Hey, welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. You can vote in our poll on X. We put up a brand new poll question every day. You'll find it on X at Lars Larson Show and on my website at LarsLarson.com. Let me start with a brand new study. And this study is about guns and the people who hate guns. The folks who are out there to try to ban all civilian ownership of guns in America. You know, the folks who get all that money from George Soros and the folks who get all that money from Michael Bloomberg and others, Everytown and all that nonsense. Yeah. When anti-gun measure, would you be surprised if the anti-gun measure actually inspired people to go out and buy a lot of guns? I mean, I guess to some extent it makes sense to me. In the same way that anti-gun presidents like, say, Barack Hussein Obama was one of the best gun salesmen that America had ever seen. Well, let me give you this study, though, and it just came out this week. And it has to do with one of the most notorious measures in the entire country. It is Oregon's ballot measure 114. It is portrayed as simply being one more set of sensible gun restrictions. The only problem with that idea is that it effectively made it illegal for any citizen to be able to buy any gun whatsoever. Now, I know you're going to say, no, Lars, you're overstating that. That would be a violation of the Second Amendment to the Constitution. Yes, it is a violation of the Second Amendment. It's also a violation of the state constitution's guarantee that you have the right to keep and bear arms. In fact, in the case of Oregon, Oregon has a constitutional guarantee that is even more clearly written than the Second Amendment to the federal constitution. Except that what they proposed and what was voted through by a very thin margin by voters in ballot measure 114, it said, and it created kind of a catch-22. It said, if you want to buy a gun, before you even go down to look at guns, you've got to go get a permit to buy a gun. And if you say, Lois, that sounds duplicative. I mean, when people buy guns in America, anywhere in America, you have to fill out the form 4473. You're put through a background check. No, this is something on top of that. It said, if you want to buy a gun before you get the background check, after you buy the gun, you have to be, well, you have to be certified to be able to buy the gun beforehand. You say, hold on. Well, how do you get certified? Well, you take a class. Who offers the class? There's no requirement that the government offer the class. Oh, so in other words, you have to get a permit to buy a gun, but to get the permit, you have to take a class and a test, except there is no requirement that the class and the test actually be offered up. In other words, a catch-22, where you're able to buy the gun under the Second Amendment, but only if you get the permit first. In fact, it's one of the craziest ideas, because I've pointed this out before, that in all the other constitutional rights you have, do you need to go get a permit if you want to practice your religious faith? No, of course you don't. How about a permit from the government to exercise free speech? Nah, you don't have to have that either. How about a permit to insist on your Fifth Amendment rights against self-incrimination? You don't need a permit for that. How about a permit to make sure that your Fourth Amendment rights against unreasonable search and seizure, the government coming into your house without a warrant, do you need a permit for that? No. So in other words, this would be the only constitutional right where to be able to actually exercise the right, you have to get a permit first. So what happened when they passed this thing? Well, there's a brand new study out from some university researchers. We invited them to come on the show, but you know how university researchers are. They said, oh, we don't want any contact with anything conservative, so we're not going to be willing to do that. But Here's what they say. We estimate that 18 months after the election that passed ballot measure 114, effectively a ban on buying guns, Oregon had accumulated what they call approximately 63,000 excess background checks due to measure 114. Now, what they mean by that is every time anybody buys a gun, there has to be a background check. There is a normal level of background checks. The passage of measure 114 caused the number of background checks to go up in 18 months in a state that only has about 4.5 million people. It went up by 63,000. They say our point estimate for harvesting effects in periods following the period is negative. If the harvesting effect implied by the point estimate were to persist, it would take 4 years of normal sales of guns to account for the full anticipatory demand increase. If the true effect is null, then Measure 114's induced spike in firearms demand may never be negated. In other words, you would ordinarily expect that if there's a giant jump in gun sales, it'll be followed by a drop in gun sales, except the university researchers who did this study said, we saw the jump. It went up by 63,000 over the normal levels, and then it didn't drop back down. They say Oregon's permit to purchase referendum caused a significant short-term spike in gun demand, and demand primarily increased after the results of the election were known, and that is a time shift of having more gun sales now, fewer later. That's not what's happening. Demand increases were proportionally largest in the counties opposed to the policy. Gun control policies, they conclude, can paradoxically increase gun buying in the short run. In other words, if you buy the argument that is put forward by the folks who promoted ballot measure 114 in Oregon, and it was heavily promoted by out-of-state interests, some of them interests from the East Coast of the United States, if their theory was we're all safer if fewer guns are out in civilian hands. Now, it's a ridiculous premise. It's suggesting that if you put more guns in the hands of law-abiding citizens, that there will be more criminal activity involving guns. Like I said, it's a stupid argument, but it's an argument made by liberals. So when was the last time you heard a liberal actually make a sensible argument about anything? But if their goal was to reduce the number of guns that are present in the population, ballot measure 114's passage almost 4 years ago now has actually created the opposite effect. Tens of thousands of people more went out and bought guns because of ballot measure 114. It had exactly the opposite effect that the folks who promoted the measure to begin with actually said they believed in. Glad to get your phone calls and your emails. If you want to take part in what we always call the best conversation in talk journalism, it happens right here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. As always, if you're a naysayer, for 30 years now, every time a naysayer calls, my producers put them first in line, but be prepared with your best argument and to stick around for a few questions from me. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Vote in our X poll question. You'll find it at Lars Larson Show. And you're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Thinking about selling your home.
Speak now or forever hold your peace. 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-HEY-LARS. Now, back to the Lars Larson Show.
That makes a lot of sense, a lot of nonsense.
Right, you're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have? to sit for this nonsense?
That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead fish wrapper or mainstream media bias.
So here's the question I've got. Have the spendthrift leaders of Portland finally come to their senses and decided to sabotage their own deal with Trailblazer owner Tom Dundon? I certainly hope so. Politicians at the city, county, and state levels have seemingly lost their minds in the last 6 weeks, and they plan to give away hundreds of millions of taxpayer dollars to benefit a private company and a billionaire. This morning, the Portland City Council got together to take a vote on what may be their final deal or their final term sheet that they're going to give to Tom Dundon. And they appear to have loaded it up with poison pills, a $3 million annual fee to make up for lost property taxes, $2 million a year in rent, which is not nearly enough. If that doesn't kill the deal with cheapskate Dundon, I don't know what will. And it's about time they did this. The strange thing is that when this Blazer mess has done to Oregon's typical liberal politicians, because remember, liberals usually condemn rich guys like Dundon, or they want to tax the daylights out of them, or both. It's rare to find today's communist wannabes proposing to give away the taxpayers' money to billionaires. I hope this kills the boondoggle Moda Center renovation and forces Dundon to carry through on his threat to leave, which is likely to cost him about $1 billion in NBA fees. I don't think he's got the cash. I think he's going to have to keep the team here. He's merely trying to engage in extortion with the city of Portland and the state of Oregon and have them pony up a bunch of taxpayer money when he doesn't really have the resources to be able to take the team anywhere else anyway. In any case, glad to get your calls today on a Wednesday. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, we will put you right to the head of the line. You're somebody who thinks it's worth the taxpayers' dollars to go in and subsidize tenant improvements at the Moda Center. I don't think it makes any sense, but if you do, I'm glad to hear your argument. Just bring your best stuff to 866-439-5277. Send emails to talk at larslarson.com and vote in our poll on X. We put up a brand new poll question every day. Today's question, should the president have to tell Congress about his security plans? I would answer that one no, and it doesn't matter whether the president is Donald Trump, doesn't matter whether it was Joe Biden or back in the day Barack Obama or Billy Clinton or anybody else. Why should the Congress have to give real-time information to the United States Congress on security plans? All of this has become an issue mostly because the mainstream media, the legacy media, is unhappy about the fact that President Trump secretly managed to get off of Air Force One onto another plane when the Secret Service informed him that there was an Iranian threat against his life and they had to get him out of harm's way. Well, what does Senate Majority Minority Leader Chuck Schumer say? The Senate should be immediately briefed on the Iranian threats against the president, the extraordinary measures taken to get him out of Turkey, any risks posed to U.S. personnel, and any threat to the homeland. That's Chuck Schumer. He wants to know about that stuff immediately. Does it make sense that if the Secret Service is trying to keep the president out of harm's way, to keep the president from getting shot again, I'll remind you, again, because he's been shot once already, if they're trying to keep him from another threat against his life, the Congress seems to think it's their business to know about it immediately. I would beg to differ. In any case, you can find the X poll at Lars Larson Show and brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. Now, our question of the day brought to you by Multnomah Medical Clinic. No pills, no shots, no surgery. Fix what's really causing the problem at Multnomah Medical Clinic. Ron writes in, Lars, somehow, some way, they need to keep political advertising to a standard of truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth. Janelle Bynum's ads talking about how she fought the feds about taking away health care from 25,000 Oregonians is such a half-truth. It only takes those off that should not be on it, illegal aliens and those who don't or won't meet the work requirements from day one. Signed, Ron Burson. And Ron, I think you're exactly right about that. Janelle Bynum should tell the truth. Do I think Janelle Bynum is capable of telling the truth? No, as a matter of fact, I don't. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Presented by Oregon City Garage Door.
Hey, this may seem like a small matter, but I think when it gets hot during the summertime, and these days we've had a weird kind of summer. Some days are really, really hot, and other days are much, much cooler. It's been a nice mix of days during the summer. But I missed this story entirely when Willamette Week first ran it, and they ran some time ago. The city of Portland ordered a citizen-run youth program to discontinue a popular water slide. Apparently, they've been doing this for 50 years at a park called Brooklyn Park. And what they did in southeast Portland, somebody would go up and put a 100-foot-long, 20-foot-wide strip of polyethylene sheeting down on the grass. And there was a hill there. And then they would wet it down, and kids would slide down the hill. For 50 years, they've been doing this, and all of a sudden, the city of Portland decides, no. The plastic on the grass damages the grass, and so therefore we are forbidding it. After it's been going on for 50 years, and knowing that when we get to this fall, the minute the fall rains hit all that grass, whatever grass has been damaged is going to pop right back up again. Shame on the city of Portland for that. Let's go to Ron in Tacoma. Hey, Ron, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind, sir?
What's on my mind today is Chuck Schumer. What you just said on the air there, I just wanted to point something out. I believe we have the Secret Service because the Democrat Party murdered our first president. So I'm thinking...
Not first, but Abraham Lincoln. You're right. Yep.
There you go. Yeah. So I'm just saying, how about no, Schumer? and they're not designed to help your feelings. They're designed to save our president.
I think you're absolutely... And very nicely said. Because, and I think, Frank, the reason this is being driven by the legacy media, they're embarrassed that the Secret Service managed to get Trump off of Air Force One. The media was on Air Force One, and the media never got wise to the idea. And that means the Secret Service, and I've been critical of them in the past for their failures at Butler, PA. It appears the Secret Service is doing a very good job, and they're keeping their lips zipped. Ron, thanks for the call from Tacoma. You're listening to the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show. Portland's news, traffic, and weather. Have something to say but don't want to talk? Email Lars at talk@larslarson.com. Now, back to the Lars Larson Show.
Hey, welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. And also to welcome to the program Aaron Mesh, managing editor at WWeek.com, about a story they've done that is so unbelievable, it almost sounds like it was written by the Babylon Bee. A $7 million flop, a secret law firm review, a $200 million government agency here in the Northwest that refuses to show its homework. What in the world is Prosper Portland trying to hide? Hey, Aaron, welcome back. And can you answer that question, or did your reporters answer it?
I can't tell you what they're trying to hide, but I have some guesses. So as you know, Sophie Peel has been writing about Prosper Portland and a project called Made in Old Town for about 2 years now, or at least more than a year. Made in Old Town was a sneaker incubator campus that was designed to take this area of town in Portland, which is mostly known for social services and homeless camping, and try to put a startup incubator for people who were in the shoe apparel business and wanted to like create little alternatives to Nike. A bunch of former Nike executives were involved in the project, and Prosper Portland loaned them $7 million to purchase two buildings downtown at extremely inflated cost. The properties were appraised at much lower values than what Made in Old Town paid for them and what Prosper loaned them the money to pay. And also the loans, as we wrote and as you and I have discussed before, flouted Prosper's own guidelines. Prosper Portland is not supposed to give loans of this size for a project this speculative at these on these terms. At any rate, everything about it raised red flags, and of course, naturally, the project went into default fairly quickly and has had to get the buildings repoed by Prosper Portland, the Economic Development Agency. So that's all the backdrop to the new director of Prosper Portland getting up in a public hearing and saying that he had requested an external review by law firms of what of Prosper's own loan policies and the success and results of their loans, which would be very
sounds good on paper, right?
Yeah,
I mean, well, it sounds like we're going to do an outside review. Somebody will come in and look at it hard and tell us what's wrong with it, if there's anything wrong with it. Except that's not the way it worked, is it?
Well, it's not, because it is exciting to finally get someone to do an outside review of to see if like this was an outlier or whether it's actually indicative of larger patterns of loan behavior at Prosper Portland, except that Prosper Portland won't release the results of those reviews or anything from those reviews. They have said that those reviews are covered by attorney-client privilege, in which Prosper is the client. The outside firms reviewing the loans are the attorney.
Now, let me ask you, because this comes up all the time with state and local agencies. I almost think the public records law should say attorney-client privilege is overridden, where the attorney is working on behalf of eventually the public, right? I mean, if a public agency hires an attorney, are they working for the public agency, which is a non-entity? Are they working for the executives of the public agencies who are employees? Or are they actually working for the people paying the bill, meaning the taxpayers? I would argue they're working for the taxpayers, and I think there ought to be an immediate workaround to say you can't hide stuff behind, you know, attorney-client privilege, because all you're doing is allowing the employees of the public or earning their paychecks from the taxpayers to hide the evidence of their misdeeds, if any, from the people paying the bill.
No, it's a clear abuse of the spirit of attorney-client privilege, which is intended to protect conversations you're having with your lawyer about things you've done wrong. Except that in this case of things being done wrong, obviously things being done on behalf of the public, which means the public has a right to know.
Yep. Is there any likelihood we can break that loose? Or is there anybody in an official position, say an elected officer, who has the ability to ask for the attorney-client privilege protected stuff and then release it to the public? Is that a workaround?
Oh, sure. That could be done in 30 seconds. All that has to happen is the mayor has to, like, request the record and then send it to us.
Is he going to do that?
I doubt it. Mayor Keith Wilson, if you're listening to this show, release the records. But
he's got no spine. Is it just lack of spine? Because if he says, well, the attorneys reviewed it and everything was completely kosher, then no harm, no foul to releasing it. On the other hand, if he's looked at it himself and says, yeah, this is full of all kinds of damaging information, well, then all the more reason to release it to the public. So what justification could he have for not doing exactly what you're asking?
Cowardice. I mean, elected officials are always captured by their bureaucrats. That's a long-standing tradition in Portland and probably everywhere else, come to think of it. But I will tell you that we have every intention of getting those records. I'm not going to tell you our methods, but we'll get them. I'm predicting on the air that we are going to get those records by the end of the year.
Now, let me ask you something we kind of skipped past, and that is, you said they've got these buildings that had inflated values, and I would imagine right now, like if they're like all other downtown real estate in Portland, they've lost even more value. But I'd like to know who got the big payday from the inflated price paid for the buildings, and is there any political connection there?
It's a great question. I don't have the answer for you on the air at this second, but let's see if we can circle back to that one. It's a very valid question.
Because this sounds like the kind of sleazy crap that you get in truly, I mean, I don't think of Portland as a corrupt city, although it has a certain amount of just incompetent corruption. Any word yet on what the city is going to do with its Trailblazers question?
So they're voting today. They're in the middle of... I think they will. They're in the middle of amendments. They approved an amendment package this morning. They're approving it. They approved another amendment about an hour ago that will charge the Blazers a certain amount of rent. My guess is you're going to see that the term sheet's going to pass by an 8-4 vote. That's just my guess. It might be 9-3. It might be 7-5. But since I'm in the prediction business today, I'm just turning to Cauchy over here. I'm going to say 8-4.
Okay. So if they do that, are they putting their own poison pills in the deal because they want to kill the deal? Because they're saying, well, we want money for property tax. We want money for rent. They already know that Dundon's already said he's not paying anything anyway. So are they trying to poison their own well?
I don't think so. So, okay. Remember that this is opening salvo. What they're approving is not a final term sheet. It's an initial term sheet, which means that they are instructing and giving the power to negotiators to sit across the table from Tom Dundon and say, this is our first offer. What's your first offer? And then begin. So they should, and it's good practice for them to actually make the offer sort of unpalatable for Dundon as the opening salvo.
Because, by the way, what should we think of the fact that they've hired negotiators in the county who are actually former Blazer executives? We'll have to consider that one another day. That is Aaron Mesh, the managing editor at WWeek.com. You can find the whole story about Prosper Portland right there. Are you thinking about...
On the go? Can't listen to Lars live? No problem. Get the podcast 24/7 at LarsLarson.com. Now, more with Lars Larson.
Hey, welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm glad to get your phone calls and emails. I was just kind of laughing because, you know, the governments in Oregon and Washington seem so colossally incompetent. I mean, they're the kind of incompetence where Seattle has a gang shooting at the Bight of Seattle. They call it a mass shooting, but it turns out to be a big gang dispute. And it takes them 5 hours to get a news conference together because the mayor is incompetent and the governor of Washington is incompetent, all that. And then Oregon, you know, Oregon's just as bad. You've got the city of Portland and the state of Oregon trying to figure out how to give away hundreds of millions of dollars to a billionaire. And that decision is pending today, although the real decision is not for months. They're just trying to get the starting point. I got a tip about an hour and a half ago, and I love it when tips turn out to be absolutely correct. The tip was that the head of the Oregon State Hospital, now that's the crazy house, they've been looking for a superintendent for a long, long time. And they finally found one back in June, and his name is Sean Murphy. And then Sean Murphy got the job about 1 month ago, so the 13th of July, so almost exactly a month ago. And then guess what happened? The Oregon Health Authority just announced in an email to employees that Sean Murphy, hired in June, took on the job in July to run the Oregon State Hospital after a one-year search for a permanent superintendent, will not be continuing in the role, as they say. In other words, it sounds like he got fired. The email says health authority officials decided to end Sean Murphy's trial service period and resume the search for a permanent superintendent. It took them all of 1 month. So, Jim Deigel, who is the hospital's most recent interim superintendent, will take over. And you kind of wonder what's going on at the Oregon Health Authority. They gave no reason for why he would start in a job on July 13th and be let go by August the 12th. Interesting to find that happen. The other thing I'm going to be interested to find out about, if they put this guy in the job, the usual practice for Oregon and in Washington State is they put public servants, so-called, into jobs like this. They usually make six figures easily, meaning they make hundreds of thousands of dollars in salary and benefits and everything else. You know what's going to be really fascinating to me is that I've always been amazed how much money they put in the golden parachute when they get rid of somebody. In this case, Sean Murphy had a tenure of exactly 1 day less than a month. As the head of the Oregon State Hospital, you wonder how big a golden parachute are they going to write for him? And what in the world justifies that? If they decide to put somebody into a job And they don't make it clear from the beginning. If we don't like the job that you're doing, then we're going to move on to somebody else, but we're not going to write you a gigantic fat check just to go out the door. And yet that is exactly what Oregon and Washington seem to specialize in doing. They end up firing people from jobs only to find out, only for the taxpayers to find out, that we're having to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars to get rid of people from jobs. In any case, glad to have you with me. Glad to take your phone calls. This segment of the show is brought to you by eLegacy. You've spent your whole life building up that wealth. Don't leave your family's wealth unprotected. Set your kids and your grandkids up for success by creating a customized estate plan with eLegacy. Go to eLegacyLars.com and set up a complimentary consultation. That's eLegacyLars.com. Glad to take your calls. If you want to jump into what we call the best conversation in talk journalism, it's here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Naysayers, as always, go to the head of the line. Send emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Our ex-poll question today: should the president have to tell Congress immediately about his security plans? I would answer that one no. The whole issue has been raised because Donald Trump was brought back from Turkey. He was on Air Force One. People saw him board Air Force One, but he was switched secretly by the Secret Service to another airplane because there was an Iranian threat to the president's life. Well, now Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, playing along with the legacy media, is saying the Senate should immediately be briefed on the Iranian threats against the president, the extraordinary measures taken to get him out of Turkey, and any risks posed to U.S. personnel and any threat to the homeland. No, I don't think Chuck Schumer or any of the Democrats ought to be informed immediately. I think the U.S. Congress, both Democrat and Republican, leaks like a sieve, and handing them the information, at least handing them the information immediately, only promises to put the information in the hands of the bad guys right away. The ex-poll question can be found at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com, and brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Now, I want to tell you about something that is being proposed now that is so laughable. Oregon now spends more money per student per year than the national average. In other words, the national average is around $18,000 per student per year. I'm sorry, it's $18,000 nationwide. Oregon spends almost $20,000, $19,700 per student per year for K through 12 education. Now, if that sounds like a college tuition bill, it does sound like that. $19,700 each for every child between kindergarten and 12th grade. That is what the funding for education is right now. There is now an Oregon Education Funding Committee. Now, the legislature in Oregon is controlled by a two-thirds Democrat majority. So just think of this as this is the Democrats' point of view. They want to see education funding at the state level doubled from $2.5 billion to $5 billion per year. In other words, they want to take a state that is already spending the greatest amount of money, $1,000 more than the national average, and producing terrible results. They want to see a gigantic increase, a doubling of state funding for education. They say it should go from $2.5 billion to $5 billion, and that is even though the current results of Oregon education are terrible. The state of Oregon ranks near the bottom of all education results in the United States of America. Mississippi outdoes Oregon, and yet Oregon spends the most and gets the least. And now the Democrats running the legislature, they want to double state funding for education. Back in a moment, you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network and the Lars Larson Show.
Lars Larson Show.
Hey,
FM News 101.
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars.
Sunday.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Well, Massachusetts just expanded what they call late-term abortion access, except late-term doesn't even begin to describe what this is. It's taking abortion literally up to the last minute before the baby would have been born. Now, why is that significant? Because the Democrat Party, that's Kamala Harris, Joe Biden, President Otto Penn, they have all denied that they are doing any such thing. And then, of course, they do it anyway. So you're going to have to ask them some more questions. Let me get into the details of that in just a moment. First, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails. We call this the best conversation in talk journalism, and it's here every day. And you're welcome to join at 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, boy, for 30 years, we've always made sure that naysayers go to the head of the line. You just need a couple of things. Number one, get quickly to your point. If you disagree with me about something like this, for instance, late-term abortion, aborting babies right up to the minute or the second before that baby is born, I know it sounds ugly. It is ugly, but that's what the Democrats have decided they stand for. And yet, they haven't really decided they stand for it because they've been so busy trying to deny it. For example, let me play one soundbite. I'll ask producer Joel Maha to play the soundbite of President Otto Penn and Kamala Harris denying, saying there is absolutely no truth whatsoever that the Democrats are in favor of last-minute abortions. Take a listen.
We are not for late-term abortion, period, period, period.
Nowhere in America is a woman carrying a pregnancy to term and asking for an abortion. That is not happening. It's insulting to the women of America.
Well, maybe it's insulting, but guess what? This week, Massachusetts will allow abortion up to the moment of delivery after Governor Maura Healey signed legislation. She did this 2 days ago on Monday, that extended abortion protection, so-called. The new law applies to women experiencing serious pregnancy complications so they can, quote, receive medically appropriate care from their medical providers they know and trust. In other words, they can kill the baby right up to the last minute. Now, what happened? After the Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe v. Wade, that was 4 years ago in 2022, there were a number of states that said we're going to ban abortion altogether. And abortion proponents, the ones who are pushing abortion, say the new Massachusetts law makes patient protection stronger and expands access to what they call reproductive health care. Now, hold on a second. You're not reproducing if you're killing the baby. Killing the baby is the opposite of reproduction. So it doesn't even fit the definition. But in signing that bill, the governor of Massachusetts makes Massachusetts not the first, not the second, not the third state, but the 10th state to allow abortion up to the moment of birth. And that's even though people like Joe Biden, people like Kamala Harris and others have said there's no truth to that at all. In fact, they're still trying to live down the fact that the former governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia, Ralph Northam, who was himself a medical doctor, at one point slipped in an interview. And it became a moment that was infamous for what he was saying. He said, you know, if you have a baby that's born, you can set the baby aside and then we can have a discussion about the future of that baby. This is the thing the Democrats are working their way up to. They want to make it legal, and they have already in 10 states, to kill a baby right up to the moment of birth. But then what about after the baby is born? There are people out there, Professor Peter Singer is one of them, who have argued that you should be able to abort a baby even up to days, or maybe even as much as a month after the baby is born. If you say, well, that's crazy. Well, that's exactly what Governor Ralph Northam, who, as I reminded you, was not only at the time he said it, the governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia, he was a medical doctor at the time. And yet, Kamala Harris, even recently on Face the Nation, Kamala Harris, who clearly plans to run for president of the United States and lose again, she's out there advocating for the idea, no, nobody is trying to kill babies up to the moment of birth. Listen to this.
They say that allows Democrats to perform abortions up until, you know, birth.
Which is ridiculous.
Which is not accurate.
And it's ridiculous, and it's a mischaracterization of the point. No, the point is, the point is,
we have
to, I am being precise. We need to put into law the protections of Roe versus Wade. And that is about going back to where we were before the Dobbs decision.
Yeah, before the Dobbs decision, the Democrats would have you believe that the right, as they called it, to abortion was somewhere in the U.S. Constitution. Now, those of us who've actually read the U.S. Constitution knows there is no such thing in the U.S. Constitution. And finally, 4 years ago, the U.S. Supreme Court finally decided the same. And that was, there is no right in the Constitution to abortion. But now, the Democrats are absolutely beside themselves. They are anxious to go out in every state that will still allow abortions to say, we want it to the greatest degree. So they now have 10 states in which you can wait until the last second before that baby would be born naturally and simply kill the baby. Now, here's the way Marjorie Dannenfelser puts it. She is pro-life like I am. She says it should shock the conscience that tens of thousands of unborn Americans are barbarically dismembered limb by limb and torn apart every single year. Sadly, that number will only increase with Governor Maura Healey's approval of the abortion up until birth bill. The GOP must abandon its leave it to the states position, a stance that permits egregious late-term abortion laws like this one and advance national protections for unborn children. I happen to disagree with Marjorie Dannenfelser on that. I don't think it is a decision for the federal government to make. I think every state is going to have to make that decision, because you're going to find people, if they were to impose a federal ban on abortion, if it survived the courts, and that's an open question right now, then the question is whether or not states would be willing to do that and tolerate what's going on. I don't think that's going to work. What is working right now, and it clearly galls people like Kamala Harris and Joe Biden, the fact that they have lied to the American public. They have said, we are not trying to get abortion up to the moment of birth, when in fact 10 states have now made it legal, Massachusetts being the latest one. And Marjorie Dannenfelser is right about that. It is going to continue to take lives in the United States, and the Democrats need to stop lying about it. And people who are in the reporting business like me need to get Kamala Harris and demand that Kamala Harris explain. If you said they're not trying to get abortion up till the moment of birth, then explain why Massachusetts just made it completely legal. Glad to get your calls. If you want to jump in, it's 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network. Coming up in a moment, cities around the country copied it. Politicians praised it. But a brand new report says that participants in Seattle were more likely to die than to actually get a job. Is Seattle's model program for criminals a total failure? We're going to talk about that with the guy who broke the story. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Reading glasses.
National, Lars has you covered. Call him from anywhere. 866-HEY-LARS. Now, back to the Lars Larson Show.
Hey, welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. You know, I constantly hear from people on the left who are saying that if only we had alternate ways of dealing with criminals, that we could straighten out their behavior without having to send them off to prison. Now, I usually disagree with them. I don't think they have a very good argument. And in fact, this next guest, Ari Hoffman, who joins me now, who's host of the Ari Hoffman Show, his show follows mine on our Seattle affiliate, and he's the one who broke the story as far as I'm concerned. But it has to do with Seattle's so-called law enforcement assisted diversion, the LEAD program. Now, LEAD was sold to the rest of the country as, oh, it's a tremendous success story in Seattle, and you should do it. It's leading to gigantic drops. getting their lives back in order. Except it turns out none of that is apparently true. So, Ari, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me, buddy.
Hey, if I've mischaracterized what LEAD has produced and what is not produced, please feel free to straighten out my what I said to the audience, because I want them to understand, does this thing work or not?
Oh, no, it's a colossal failure and has been for years. I remember way back when the LEAD program's director, Lisa Dugard, actually asked me to meet with her because I was bashing the program so much, and she wanted to tell me how great it was, and this was back in 2018. So I went down to their offices, and I met with Lisa Dugard, and I met with her staff, and I'm sitting there talking to them, and I said, well, these sob stories are really great, but do you have any actual data that you can show me this thing works? And then I got every letter in the alphabet, or every vowel, I should say, A, E, I, O, U, you know, like they had nothing to say. And then, oh, we'll send it to you, we'll send it to you. And I said, great, I look forward to it. Suffice it to say, it's now 2026, that was 2018, I have never received that data. I did notice that shortly thereafter, though, you might remember that New York did this bail reform program that was a colossal disaster where criminals were just being released. That was based on the LEAD program, on the same lies that they told out here. In fact, this program has been rolled out in North Carolina, in Maine, in New Jersey, in California. It's been rolled out all over the place. And basically, what the numbers showed from this Washington Policy Center analysis is that if you went to jail, you were more likely to get employed. You had a 50% chance, over 50% chance of getting employed and turning your life around. Whereas under the LEAD program, you were three times more likely to die than actually get a job or do anything productive with your life, because all it was a get out of jail free card that will release criminals back to the streets.
So how is it that Seattle's LEAD program, the law enforcement assistance diversion, how is it they were able to run around and claim to the whole country, if you've got people in our program, they're 58% less likely to be arrested for new crimes, their felony charges went down by 39%, that their housing opportunities and their employment opportunities went up dramatically? How'd they get away with this when it turns out it wasn't true?
Well, all you needed was somebody to actually look at the numbers. And our friend Eric Zimmerman actually looked at the numbers, and he did a full analysis breaking these down. And when he did, he said, none of these numbers are right. You guys either don't know math or you're flat out lying. And you know this, Lars. A friend of mine actually described politicians as puddles. They're very, very shallow, but they're spread out everywhere. So like their knowledge, same kind of thing, right? So they think they know a lot about a lot, but they don't. And how many times do you think any politician actually read a bill that they signed? Or how many times do you think they actually looked at the data? All they do is look at the executive sheet, maybe the executive summary, and says, oh, 58%, great, let's do it. And those numbers haven't changed since 2018. Now, whether they were fraudulent to begin with or whether these people don't know how to do math, the question should be, if you're investing millions of dollars over time, shouldn't your results change a little bit? Should your results improve or go down depending on the year? I mean, look, not every year is a great fundraising year for nonprofits. Some years are bad years. Shouldn't those numbers alter? They've been using the same data set for over a decade, and nobody bothered to check, and they just kept rolling this thing out. In the meantime, they didn't think to themselves, gee, why are all these criminals running around everywhere, and why is this program not working?
Any chance this program can then die if it has been very expensive and long-lasting and a failure? Should they kill it?
Well, absolutely they should kill it, but you should think about this. When Bruce Harrell, former mayor of Seattle, got elected, he announced he was going to do an audit of the LEAD program, and I was shocked. I was absolutely shocked because I assumed he'd do nothing. And I thought to myself, wow, maybe I was wrong about him. Nope, I was wrong about being wrong about him, because he caved under pressure when the activists and crew showed up to say, no, it's a great program. How dare you even audit the thing? So there's a lot of people making a lot of money off this who are no longer be making the money off this if it goes away. Also, Lisa Dugard won all these awards and was recognized for her achievements, and it was all fake. It was all fraudulent. It was all non-existent.
And you would think, I mean, here's the thing I would assume, Ari, if I were running a program like that and I thought I was actually producing those kind of results, I'd say, come on, bring it on. Come on in, do an audit. You're going to see how well we've been doing. And once you see that, you'll want to double or triple the size of the thing. That's Ari Hoffman. He does the talk show on our Seattle affiliate, KVI, and I'm glad to have him come on the program and talk about this crazy LEAD program. Let me go to Phil. Hey, Phil, welcome to the program. What's on your mind today?
Hi, Lars. But before I go to my subject topic that
the analogy of politicians are like puddles was hilarious.
Wasn't it?
But,
yeah. I thought it was great.
But, yeah. But it's about the abortion topic, and I'm 63, and so it used to be like rape and incest were the only real reasons you could get an abortion, and I can't believe 10 states have actually legalized up to the point of birth. That is ludicrous. It's just morally wrong.
You know, if there was ever a time in the 60s or the 50s when abortions were largely illegal, I mean, right now and for the last several decades, the United States routinely does a million or more every single year. And it's getting crazier because now they're not doing them mostly in clinics with a doctor and a scalpel or a doctor and a vacuum. Yeah. They're doing them with a pill.
And people are using it for birth control, and that's just morally wrong.
I agree with you, because it's not suggesting that you should go out and be responsible and say, if I'm going to create a baby or I'm going to have the conditions that often create pregnancies, then I need to make sure that I'm taking the right precautions. Instead, it's saying, don't worry about the precautions. You can simply take a pill and get rid of the problem. And now, with these 10 states, the thing that bothers me the most, though, is when these politicians, like Joe Biden, like Kamala Harris and others, who go out and say, oh, it's ridiculous to say we want abortion up to the moment of birth, when there are 10 states where it's actually become legal, and I think that there are more that are on the way, sadly. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show. Portland's news traffic on X at Lars Larson Show. You never know what he'll post. Now, back to the Lars Larson Show.
And I think what we saw here is sort of Trump being the most elemental Trump he could be, which is that he doesn't really care about anyone else. I think he figured that the optics would never be exposed and this would remain a secret. But I think the image of him sort of crouching on a catering truck, you know, at the expense of the safety of everyone else is not a good one.
Now, that is the reaction of some of the legacy media out there. I'm not suggesting it's the kind of reaction you would have heard from Leland Vittert, who's chief Washington anchor for News Nation. But I want to ask Leland not only about the switcheroo in which Donald Trump was whisked out of Turkey on a military jet and then put back on board Air Force One because there was a threat to his life. And now the mainstream media, the legacy media, seems to have its knickers in a twist about the fact that they had no idea that it had happened. And Democrats in Congress are voicing the same kind of concern. Hey, Leland, welcome back to the program.
Lars, good to be with you as always.
I'm glad to have you on, but tell me this. I mean, shouldn't we be applauding the idea that if there's any threat against any American president, that the, you know, we properly, or the agency in charge, Secret Service, which takes the lead, would properly take the actions necessary to protect that person's life? And if the public ends up not knowing about it, well, they probably shouldn't know about it if you're going to protect the president's life, because you don't get anywhere if you tell the potential bad guys, and that's anybody out there in the general public, you tell them, oh, let's tell you how we switch this around. And it seems to be most of this is about the mainstream media being unhappy that they weren't clued in.
Well, there's a lot to digest there, and never underestimate the Washington Press Corps, specifically the White House Correspondents Association, and its members, to make any story about themselves, right? Because they view themselves as the most important people in Washington. Fine.
Exactly.
That said.
Did I lose you, Leland? Yeah, sounds like we lost him. Will you pick him up, Joel, and find out what happened? I don't know. Right as he got to that point, that said, and we're sitting there as a cliffhanger waiting for Leland to jump back on, and all of a sudden he disappears again. So let's get him back on the line. Boy, that was a cliffhanger. You were saying, that said. Go ahead, Leland.
Well, if only I had gotten out, there are so many more important parts of this story, which is almost always when the press is deceived about the location of the president, okay, there is one member of the press that is read in on it, and it goes along so that there is this, what they call body watch, this continual eyes on the president. And by the way, there's reasons for that. And there's good reasons that the press and the president of both parties have had that understanding. The fact that they didn't want the fact that the switch occurred to come out says an enormous amount. The fact that they didn't want to disclose it, as I look at it, it's because President Trump realized and the White House realized that if it came out, as it has now, that he had to switch airplanes because of this Iranian threat.
Yep.
It brings up a whole host of other questions. What happened to the Iranian military being decimated, destroyed, done, just, you know, gone, obliterated? They haven't seen anything like it since World War II. Well, clearly, if they can then threaten the life of the president of the United States, Iran still has capabilities. That would be the number one question. Number two, going back to George H.W. Bush being targeted by Saddam Hussein and Bill Clinton launching airstrikes, yep. If you are going to plot to kill the president of the United States to the point that he needs to switch airplanes,
yeah,
there has to be a price paid for that. You don't get to do that and live to see the next sunrise, or at least you shouldn't. And that's not happened. President Trump has basically said the Iran war is over. He certainly wants it to be over, even despite this threat on his own life. So the fact that it was sealed for so long, I think, tells us a lot of things that the White House didn't want to know. I don't think there's anything about the fact that this came out that somehow further puts the president's life in danger.
Although you're aware that this was done in March of 2000 with Bill Clinton, right?
And there was a reporter on the plane.
But
there was a reporter. There was a reporter read into it.
Yes.
And by the way, this was also done a number of other times where the president was sneaked out of wherever they were over the holidays to fly to a war zone. And all of a sudden, boom, the president lands in a war zone. Or boom, you don't know until he's taken off from the war zone. That's happened a number of times.
But wouldn't that have been very difficult if they'd gone on Air Force One and they get the president switched to the C-32 that then flies from Ankara to Mindenhall and then switches back to the other plane? If they'd pulled some other reporter off of Air Force One, that would have immediately alerted everybody else on the plane there's been a change, wouldn't it?
Yes. There's lots of other ways to do this. Having been in the White House press corps, there's a lot of reporters who don't fly on Air Force One. They could have very easily pulled somebody aside who was getting on the bus to go back to the airport and take one of the commercial flights home.
Yeah.
Hey, come with me for a minute. Nobody would have noticed they were gone. Give me all your cell phones, which is what they do in these cases. So at that point, the reporter goes totally black. You're coming with me, and we're going to drive you out and put you on this other plane. And then when they land in Mindenhall, they put out a note and say, President Trump left Air Force One, got on this other plane. I was with them the whole time. We landed, no big deal, and nobody would have cared. The fact that they didn't want the story reported like that, to me, is very significant. It tells me that they were worried about the fallout of the demand for some kind of action about the Iranians. Think about this. The Iranians have the capability to threaten the life of the president of the United States on Air Force One. This is supposed to be the most secure plane in the world. That is the real story.
Now, tell me this, because in the summer of the campaign, right, as we headed up to the 24 election, that we were told by the intelligence agencies there are a number of plots against the life of Donald Trump when he was still a candidate. Now, we know about what happened in Butler, PA. We know about the golf course and that attempt, but there were other attempts, and they were said to be tied back to the Iranians as well. So we've had an ongoing threat against the president's life that goes all the way back to the middle of the campaign, doesn't it?
It does. And again, if you are going to threaten the life of the president of the United States or a candidate, okay, and to the point that he had to switch planes, which Trump used the decoy planes before during the campaign, and all it does is provoke people and bullies provoke the rest of the world. Weakness is provocative. And right now, the Iranians view the United States as weak. Weaker still, because the President of the United States had to switch planes, and they didn't pay a price for it.
And I would imagine there's going to be a price to be paid, and I have a feeling that Donald Trump will make them pay it. That is Leland Vitter. Leland is the host of On Balance with Leland Vitter and Chief Washington Anchor at News Nation. Pleasure to have you on. Back in a moment. You've got the Lars Larson Show. We all know that when you're...
Take a peek inside Lars's studio. Follow him on Instagram at The Lars Larson Show. Now, more with Lars Larson.
Hey, welcome back to The Lars Larson Show. So, 9 fires, 6 days, thousands of acres torched, and a suspect was a local newspaper delivery guy. Is arson quietly driving Oregon's worst wildfires? I'll get into the details of that in just a moment. First, welcome to the program. Glad to have you on board and glad to take your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And the Radio Northwest Network proudly serves the Pacific Northwest states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. And you're welcome to join in on the conversation. Our ex-poll question today: should the president have to tell Congress about his security plans? Well, that's the insistence of Chuck Schumer, who is the Senate minority leader. He says the Senate should be immediately briefed on the Iranian threats against the president, the extraordinary measures taken to get him out of Turkey, and any risks posed to U.S. personnel and any threat to the homeland. So, should the Congress immediately be told about the president's security threats? I don't think so. I don't think you can trust the Democrats in the U.S. Congress. I think they leak like a sieve. So should the president have about security plans or security threats? My answer to that would be no. You can find the question at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. It's brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Now, I got several emails about our discussion about Air Force One, about the Secret Service secretly removing President Trump from Air Force One, putting him on board a C-32, and then transporting him to Mildenhall, and then putting him back on Air Force One. Ty Rice writes in, Lars, we know the media are given instructions about their conduct aboard Air Force One and that they are required to abide by the instructions. As far as I'm concerned, the press photographer that raised the window shade after everybody had been instructed to keep them down should have been immediately removed from the plane and banned from access to Air Force One ever again. How fast do you think that idiot would have been on his phone texting if he had seen the president outside on the tarmac? I think Ty is absolutely right. And, of course, the story is that they told the folks on board Air Force One, put your window shades down and do not raise them. Well, one of the photographers, a press photographer, decided to raise his window shade anyway, and I'm absolutely sure that Ty is right. If he had seen Trump being sneaked off the plane, and the Secret Service took very careful steps to make sure that didn't happen, but if he had seen it, would they have been reporting it? Yes. Would that have compromised security? I would argue yes as well. And Joel writes in about progressive reporters being a doxing risk, and I think they are. Iran is a terrorist nation. They don't need a big army to do assassination. American progressives are culpable. This is the most garbage hack is an issue that the Democrats have not manufactured yet. They are simply upset, and it doesn't make any sense. The fact is, most of the legacy media is angry because they expect to be on the inside, and in fact, they will tell you that we're going to tell you what we're going to let you know about, and we will decide. In fact, CNN did that just the other night, where they said, we're not going to run the president's comments in his nationwide address. We will listen to them first and decide what's lies and what's not lies, and then we'll let you know after that what you're allowed to hear. That is the arrogance of today's legacy media, and they're going to have to pay the penalty for it. My favorite email of the day, but you can always send more to talk@LarsLarson.com. It's brought to you by Multnomah Medical Clinic. No pills, no shots, no surgery. Fix what's really causing the problem at Multnomah Medical Clinic. Sarah Hall writes in, Lars, I've been happily married for 22 years. It was easy and straightforward to get my name changed on my credit cards, my passport, my driver's license, and yes, even on my voter registration. The hardest thing, and I still haven't done it yet, was with PayPal. Do liberal white women hate PayPal as well? Thanks for all you do to help to educate the masses about how things really work, signed Sarah Hall. I don't know Sarah, but I think it's interesting that she's taking that point of view, because you hear all of these liberal women who say, well, if you make us have picture ID, if you make people identify themselves when they register to vote or when they actually cast a ballot, why, women won't be able to do it. And people who are people of color will not be able to do it because we don't know how to get a driver's license. And women who are married will not know how to get a new ID that is not under their, or is under their married name and not under their maiden name. Yeah, Sarah's pointed out the hypocrisy and the foolishness of all of that. And then this question raised by Jeff Eager, who you've heard on this show before, is arson secretly fueling Oregon's worst fire seasons? He writes, the Maine prosecutors say intentionally started 9 fires near Ontario, Oregon on 6 different days in June and July, worked for a local newspaper, and owns a home, according to court and tax records obtained by the Oregon Roundup Foundation. Paul Emerson, 61, scheduled to enter a plea on 9 charges of first-degree arson, carrying a combined theoretical maximum sentence of 180 years in prison. Prosecutors and law enforcement are so far mum regarding Emerson's possible motive. KTVB of Boise reported the Lytle fire began burning near Vail the afternoon of June 22nd and grew to 6,500 acres. The Cow Camp Complex was a grouping of fires that started on July 21st near the Malheur-Baker County line, burned over 8,000 acres. Consider this. One of the most unusual things I saw about this case involving Paul Emerson, the judge apparently told him, you own a home. I am not going to provide you with a taxpayer-funded attorney. And I thought that was great. It was refreshing because I'm so used to the judges in the Pacific Northwest, both in Oregon and Washington, deciding everybody gets a free taxpayer-funded attorney. I don't think that should be the case. If you're capable of providing your own counsel at your own expense, the fact that you are guaranteed the right to counsel does not mean that the taxpayer should always have to pay for the attorney that represents you in court. It should only be necessary if you're truly indigent. And by the way, if you believe in supporting American craftsmanship, veterans, and independent talk radio, go to my website and pick up a limited edition Lars Larson Show challenge coin. Proudly made by American veterans, everyone comes with a personally signed thank you card from yours truly. All proceeds from those coins go to benefit veterans. Not a single dime of it goes to us. Your calls are welcome at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com.
Lars Larson Show. FM News 101.
We'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at the level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to take to your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Now, the fact that Dr. Anthony Fauci testified to the Congress, I believe he lied. Well, he He lied, in effect, by claiming the Fifth Amendment, saying that he could not answer those questions because it might have the effect of implicating him in a criminal activity. Except the guy has a presidential pardon, but it has raised again for all of us the issue of COVID vaccine and the injuries that have happened because of the jab. And in the interest of full disclosure, I think most of you already know if you listen to the show, I never took the jab. And I've never regretted that decision. And then we have people today who are now saying, well, Fauci never actually said the vaccine was completely safe. Well, it takes about 5 seconds to find lots and lots of sound bites of Anthony Fauci vouching for the vaccine and saying it is completely safe and disparaging people who refuse to take it. So I thought it was a perfect time to talk to Michelle Gerber, who is a Washington State mother advocating for those who report COVID vaccine injuries in her family. Ms. Gerber, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Lars. It's great to be with you.
Would you tell me, would you mind telling my audience about your family member, your daughter, and what happened to her?
Yes, she is was a healthy, active girl in 2021. She was just finishing her master's degree, and she was forced by her job to get the vaccine. And after the first one, she felt a little not well, but, you know, she reported that to her employer, and they said, no excuses, you have to get the second one or be fired. Well, she was afraid. It was her first professional job, and she thought, if I quit now, it won't look good on my resume. So she got the shot. She has been terribly ill ever since. She is bedridden. She is disabled. She's had to go on public assistance. She's embarrassed by that. You know, she worked for a good education so she could support herself, and now she cannot. And her symptoms are just terrible, and it's terrible to watch.
Well, in fact, when you go from being somebody who's completely capable, self-sufficient, gets a master's degree, has a professional job, to being incapacitated altogether, did the medical field have any kind of conclusion about where the injuries came from? Did they agree with her that they came from the vaccine?
Oh, they definitely came from the vaccine, because the injuries began that very night, within about 2 hours of getting the vaccine. We thought it would go away. We consulted doctors who said, oh, it's going to go away, and it never did. And these are serious. These are not trivial injuries. This is not just fatigue or, you know, a headache or a sore arm. These are debilitating. They affect her heart, her lungs, her balance, her vascular system. She has diagnoses that, if I read to you, it would take your entire show. Wow. It basically created an autoimmune disease. And the way that works is that when you have this vaccine, it produces antibodies that sort of jack up your immune system. And then when you get another, if your body chemistry is a certain way, and who knows why, if you get that second one, you go into an immune storm, which your immune system is then in an autoimmune illness condition. It's on high alert, and you cannot live a normal life.
Have the doctors given her any kind of hope that there should be, that there could be some kind of resolution to her disabilities at some point?
Well, you know, we always have hope in the research, and we have consulted expert doctors across the United States. This is all out of pocket, because these are specialists, and we don't mind spending the money, but they don't have the answers. And another problem that came with this is that because of the autoimmune reaction, the hypersensitivity to anything, foods, medicines, lotions, many of the medicines she was given to try for symptom relief, her body rejected and she couldn't tolerate.
So let me ask you on the legal side of things. Has she tried to pursue something to say, well, my employer are the folks who insisted that I take these vaccines, so they have to bear some responsibility? Was she successful with that at all?
No, and not at all. These people are so protected. The fact is that in Washington State, Governor Inslee issued a decree that everyone in healthcare had to be vaccinated for the second time by October 26th. Well, in fact, the federal law did not go into effect until January 4th of 2022. And when her employer told her, you don't have time to get a medical exemption, that was wrong. That was false, because the federal law was not even in effect yet. In fact, it was a interim rule that was receiving comments.
So what's her long-term what's her long-term prospect for being able to get any of this set right? Or is she simply on her own and on public assistance and disability for the foreseeable future?
Yes, for the foreseeable future. Now, we pursue a lot of research. We pursue doctors. There is no answer. And even Centers for Disease Control admits that. They have right on their website, there is no treatment at this time that is known and accepted and effective. And the reason that this is a scandal or even maybe a crime is that some of these side effects and these harmful results were known very early, some in 2020 and many in 2021.
Yep.
In fact, there is evidence that in 2021, it was known that the COVID vaccine had an injury rate 55 times that of the measles vaccine. And it was also known in 2021 that the number of cases being reported to the vaccine adverse effects system was skyrocketed from about 200 cases reported per year for any vaccine to 21,000 reported in 2021. Now, those are signals that anybody would be crazy not to call that a signal, a red flag, and yet the public wasn't warned not to take these.
You know, it's funny because this week one of the big issues that's come up is whether or not pregnant women should have taken the jab. And I remember talking to a doctor who I still communicate with. I don't know, I know him through our coverage of COVID. And at the time, I said, are you telling your patients who are pregnant to get the jab? And he said, no, I'm telling them not to do it, but I won't say it publicly because if I do, they'll pull my medical license. Well, he's still licensed to do medicine, but he wasn't talking about it publicly, and there was a reason for that. That's Michelle Gerber, a Washington mom advocating for her daughter and her daughter's COVID vaccine injury. Back in a moment. Vision. Do you have
This is your home for honestly provocative talk radio. The truth every day. Now, back to the Lars Larson Show.
Hey, welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. In a moment, I want to tell you about a couple. They are both pastors in a church, and the church just finished buying a new property, only apparently they made the mistake of buying it in a community like Lake Oswego. And now the Lake Oswego School Board is trying to condemn the property out from under the church, even though the church legitimately bought it and has owned it for about 1 month. They closed the deal in July, and now the Lake Oswego School Board is trying to use the power of condemnation to take that property away. Let me get to the details of that in just a moment, because I'd heard from the pastor and his wife. I don't know them personally, but they had reached out to me and said, hey, we're concerned. Government is trying to take our church. And, of course, leave it to a place like Lake Ego to go after somebody's church. I don't think they care that much about whether or not people have faith or not. But let me go first to Ron. Hey, Ron, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind today?
Well, I'll tell you about the story about my wife and about the COVID shot that darn near killed her.
What happened?
Everybody was freaking out about the... I had it in 2020, and it was rough. It was bad. I mean, I got really sick. She never, ever got it. And to this day, we think that was one of the problems. She has never gotten it. But anyway, we thought we'd be responsible, go get it. I was fine. After she got her shot, she was very weak. I mean, her legs were weak. She had a hard time. And we just chalked it up that, well, maybe there's something going around, whatever, type deal. And by the time the second vaccination came around, I think like a week later, she was starting to feel a little bit better. Well, she gets the second one, and within a day, you know, she calls me into the bedroom, and I go into the bedroom, and she goes, I can't lift my head.
Oh my
and
God.
I said, what? And she goes, I can't hold up my head. She literally had to hold her head or it would fall down. And she was super weak. She could not get out of bed. I had to get her diapers, and and she was like, I think I'll be okay. I said, we got to find out what's going on. This is crazy. So we waited a day, and she was not getting any better at all. So I said, screw it. We're going to call an ambulance.
Yeah.
Called the ambulance. She went
That's
to
sensible.
The ER, and they took her blood and stuff. She had a potassium level of 1.
I don't know what that
said,
means.
We don't see a lot.
I don't know what is potassium supposed to be. I don't know the normal level
of
that.
For your, it's for your heart.
Okay. Yeah,
and
I,
your
I get that.
Levels are supposed to be around. I can't remember what he said. It's around 4 or 5. But he goes. We see dead people with potassium levels of 1.
Okay. So let's skip. Hey, Ron, skip to the bottom line. How's she doing today? And were you ever able to determine, number one, what actually happened and what went wrong, and number two, a fix for it, if at all?
Yeah, she was put on, they put her on potassium, and basically said that she had a potassium deficiency. So they had to, and she takes potassium pills, and she's doing fine now. But it all started with that shot. Mm. That's where it all started, and I
were the doctors able to determine whether or not the jab itself might have had something to do with affecting her potassium level?
They weren't saying. I think they knew that, yes, it did, because we told them that she, you know, just had it.
I think that long-term, you know what I think is going to happen, Ron? I appreciate the call. I think long-term, I think 10 or 15 years now, we're still going to be hearing about people who've got vaccine-related injuries. And the issue of the responsibility of Anthony Fauci in all of this is still going to be an open question. And I think until we finally resolve that, we're going to have a really, really tough time, because we're going to be telling people, trust the medical community. A lot of us don't trust the medical community anything like we did before the pandemic, and I don't think the medical community has done itself any favors with its behavior since then, because I think they'd engender a lot more credibility if they were to actually call out people like Anthony Fauci. Instead, they still treat the guy like he's some kind of hero. Let me tell you what's going on in Lake Oswego, though. So I had heard this morning from a couple, and they said, look, we have a church. We decided to buy a new church property. We did the research. They made the deal back in June. They closed the deal, and they got the church in July. 2.5-acre property right there in Lake Oswego. And what happened? Well, the school district decided they wanted the property instead. Now, eminent domain and condemnation are two powers that I think are absolutely essential for government. That doesn't mean they should be used as much as government uses eminent domain and condemnation. But understand, I think there's a reason that government, when it has to do something like build a military base, build a submarine base like the submarine base at Bangor, when you have to build a bridge across a body of water, there are oftentimes places that would be the best place to do that. When it's time to punch through a power line or a natural gas line or any of those other things that are absolutely essential, the ability of the government to go in and say, we're going to get a piece of property and use it for that. Except in this case, they're trying to take away a church just because the Lake Ridge School District, the Lake Oswego School Board, has decided they want to take the property away. Let's go to Bill. Hey, Bill, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hi, Lars. Yeah, I just thought I would share my experience with eminent domain with the city of Lake Oswego, and it's probably even a bigger deal with the court system. The city condemned my business property, Erickson's Automotive, March of 24.
Yeah.
And, you know, they lowballed an offer. Of course, we declined, and so we've chosen to go to court.
Good.
And we've blown past 3 court dates because criminal cases take precedence over civil cases. And they don't have the way the staffing of judges to deal with it. So our next court date is May of 27.
Wow.
And there's no assurance I will get to go to court then. So this church may be sitting empty for a very long time.
See, I think what should happen, Bill, I don't have any problem, as I said. I think the power of eminent domain is essential, but it should only be used as a last resort. And I think government has become accustomed to the idea if they want something, they will go and take it. And they will take it away from people using the power of condemnation. They should... essential purpose. If you said, for example, there's a best place to put a tunnel through that mountain to carry a freeway, there's probably one place and you need to have the property. But when Lake Oswego or the school board decides we can take your property and we will, I think their citizens should stand up and say, no, we don't believe in that, even if we're Lake Ego.
The Lars Larson Show. Portland's news, traffic, and missed the Lars Larson Show today? Find Lars's thoughts and get the podcast right now at LarsLarson.com. Now, here's Lars Larson.
Hey, welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Inflation has been wiping out wage gains for the last four straight months. Are Americans actually getting poorer with every single paycheck, or are we starting to see inflation ease just a bit? I thought we'd check in with Ryan Young, who's a senior economist at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Hey, Ryan, welcome back to the program, and help us understand what's actually going on today, because it sounds like the most recent numbers that are out in July actually moderated just a bit, despite the fact that energy stayed high. Is that a proper way to look at it?
It is. It is. Inflation eased just a touch. It's now up 3.4% over the last year, but as you pointed out, those paychecks still aren't quite keeping up. Over the last year, real wages are down 0.2%, which, you know, it's not end of the world, but it's also not ideal, especially for people who are still struggling with bills to pay and dealing with price increases everywhere. Energy prices went down in July, thank goodness, and that's why overall inflation eased a bit, although we do still have a way to go.
And when we finally get some resolution of the United States' dispute with Iran, can we expect energy prices to go down fairly dramatically and fairly soon?
It'll take half a year or a year for that to happen because of the infrastructure that's already been damaged. But suppose tomorrow we get a lasting, durable peace. Even then, that would take 6 months or a year for that stability to really be credible and believed in and for infrastructure to be rebuilt. But until that happens, uncertainty will reign and energy prices can be all over the place depending on what's in the news.
So, Ryan, what else should be done and what else can be done, if anything, by the government to try to improve this situation for average wage earners?
Well, regulation. Make it easier to build housing, to make it affordable, make it easier to start a business, make it easier to build things, make it easier to hire people. All those kinds of things not only would stimulate the economy, but they also would require more deficit spending, which itself can cause more inflation.
But does easing regulations really have to cost money? Because it sounds like what you've suggested, if you're talking about the government subsidizing something, I'm not in favor of that. But if the government, and it's not just the federal government, but the state and local governments also eased off on regulations and made it easier to build housing, that would create jobs, it would improve supply, and that would help to bring prices down too, wouldn't it?
Yeah, we're on the same page. Stimulus to be spending free. My old mentor.
You know, I don't know what's going on with Ryan's line, but I'm going to see if I can get Joel to check that line, because that line is really sounding kind of garbly, and I'm not exactly sure why. So check that out, Joel, if you would, please. See if we can get him on a cleaner line. Inflation, as measured by the Consumer Price Index, the CPI, rose 0.1% from June to July. Bureau of Labor Statistics showed that costs broadly remained elevated for consumers and volatile energy prices. Ryan, welcome back. I just wanted to see if we could improve that line.
Sure. Hopefully this sounds better.
Oh, much better.
Yeah. Excellent. Yeah, my old mentor was a guy named Fred Smith, and he said that you don't have to teach grass to grow, but you do have to take the rocks off it. So if government can get some rocks off of the economic lawn, that can do a lot to ease affordability concerns.
Well, and when you mentioned that it's going to cost money, I just think of, you know, if government agencies were to say, we have all these rules and regs, but we can forgive some of them temporarily, maybe even forgive some of them, for the foreseeable future, that doesn't have to cost money. In fact, pulling back on government regulation ought to be a money saver for both the government agency and for the private sector, shouldn't it?
Yes, that's exactly right. In fact, right now, just this week, the president agreed to extend a waiver on the Jones Act, which is a restrictive shipping law. That's helping a lot of people. And then, of course, during COVID, governments lifted about 800 regulations, at least temporarily. And that obviously didn't do away with the pandemic, but it did make a hard time a lot easier for a lot of people.
Well, in fact, you've hit on one of my favorite hobby horses of the last 30 years, and that is the Jones Act. I'd like to get rid of the law altogether, because when you ask people, well, why do we have a law that says that you, for the most part, cannot ship goods up and down the East Coast or the West Coast or the Gulf Coast unless the ship was built in America, flagged in America, and crewed with an American crew, they say, well, that's to protect American jobs in shipbuilding. Only it hasn't. It's to protect American jobs working on ships. Only it hasn't. So is this a good time to maybe get rid of that altogether and start moving more of our cargo? We have three great coastlines, you know, left coast, right coast, and Gulf of America coast. Couldn't we be doing that right now and produce some real gains for Americans by moving that cargo off the freeways and onto the water?
Yes, and that's exactly what we've been seeing for the last few months when the Jones Act has been temporarily waived. I think making it permanent would be a fantastic idea, especially since the law actually was originally a national security law from World War I. The government wanted to make sure there was a ready supply of domestic ships that they could press into naval service if another war started. But, you know, an oil tanker is not going to do the same as a modern aircraft carrier, so that became obsolete very quickly. There's no longer any reason to have the Jones Act in law.
Well, in fact, Ryan, didn't it have, I mean, the opposite effect? Most of the ships are now built where? South Korea, China, Japan, other places, certainly other places than the United States. I think we've got maybe 2 or 3% of all shipbuilding in the world.
Yeah, and that's because of all those Buy American requirements. A Jones Act compliant ship costs 3.5 to 4 times as much of an equivalent ship made in Korea or Japan. Given America's entrepreneurial environment and all the talent that we have right here in America, I think our shipping industry could be just as competitive with the rest of the world if only the government allowed it to be.
You know, the other thing I noticed, Ryan, and you tell me if my numbers are wrong on this, but when you take a look at Western Europe, they say about 40% of their cargo that's moving to various countries that front on the Atlantic Ocean is moving by water. And whereas on our West Coast, for example, 2% of our cargo moves up and down the West Coast on the water, and the other 98% moves on freeways. So the first thing that would happen if you started to move some of that back to the water, even a tiny fraction of it, is it'd get a lot of trucks off the freeways and free up a lot of and take down the wear and tear that the freeways get as well.
Yeah, a lot of our major West Coast trading partners would benefit from trading us with by ship, whether it's China, Japan, Mexico, South America. That could do a lot, not just to ease traffic on U.S. highways, but also make goods faster and less expensive for consumers to get a hold of here in the U.S.
Well, and maybe even if you couldn't move it all to actual ships, but imagine if you could move with barges up and down the West Coast. I know they move certain goods like gravel and aggregate by barges. I think there are plenty of ways to actually save money and make life better without having to spend a lot of money. Ryan is a senior economist at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Try to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. Send emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And you're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Oregon or Washington?
Lars Larson wants to hear from you, even if you disagree. Naysayers get to cut the line at 866-HEY-LARS. Now, here's Lars Larson.
Hey, welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. In a moment, I want to tell you about a case that's coming out of Washington State that is now being petitioned to the U.S. Supreme Court, and it is going to be a full-throated challenge to the whole idea of trans women, meaning biological men who pretend to be women. But let me get to that in just a moment. And it has to do with privacy and women-only spaces. And in this case, I'm going to tell you something. I think the women are entitled to have their privacy. I think men are entitled to have their privacy as well. So, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. It's a Wednesday, and I'm glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And our poll on X today. We put up a brand new poll question every day from the news of the day. Today's question, should the president have to tell the Congress about his security plans? Well, Chuck Schumer, Senate Minority Leader, after finding out that President Trump was sneaked off of Air Force One and onto a military plane to be flown on to another stop, at which point he went back onto Air Force One because there was a threat to his life from the Iranian government because of our current dispute with Iran, a war, whatever you want to call it. Chuck Schumer says the Senate should be immediately briefed on Iranian threats against the president and the extraordinary measures taken to get him out of Turkey, any risks posed to U.S. personnel, and any threat to the homeland. Well, I disagree with Chuck Schumer, but that's not a big surprise, is it? Should the president have to tell the Congress about his security plans? I think the answer to that is plainly and simply no. Today's X Poll is brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. Yesterday's poll had to do with the Democrat Socialists of America, the DSA. Do the DSA really represent America's working class citizens? Now, I said no to that. And so did 96% of you. Only 4% of you said yes to that question. And I pointed out that the DSA's own surveys showed that the Democrat Socialists of America are predominantly white. They are predominantly college educated. They represent very few people within, say, America's blue collar trades. Do I think they represent working class citizens? No. I think that's a convenient fiction that was invented by members of the DSA because they don't want to confront the fact that the DSA does not look like mainstream America. In any case, I want to get to your calls. If you want to join the conversation, it's 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Now, in Linwood, Washington, there is a place called the Olympus Spa. And the Olympus Spa is a nude, all-women spa. In other words, a woman can go there to go for spa treatments or sauna or whatever it happens to be. And the other people who will be at that spa are all women. And the place runs with people, you know, with no clothes on. Here's what's happened. Linwood's Olympus Spa wants to keep the women-only nude spa, and what they don't want is so-called trans women who still have male anatomy. In other words, if you hear the term trans woman, what that means, if you want to translate it, because these days you need a translator to understand what's going on, a trans woman is a biological man. He still has all his male plumbing intact, but he identifies that he believes that he is a woman. Now, the Olympus Spa said, we don't want trans women with male anatomy to be coming to our spa. Our spa is for women only, and it is nude, which means that the people who come there as customers have an expectation of privacy. Now, if a woman wants to go to the spa, she wants to be able to go in there, and she's willing to be in the nude around other women. She has an expectation there won't be any men there. The Olympus Spa would like to keep that status. The Ninth Circus Court of Appeals in San Francisco, the one that is overturned more than any other federal appeals court in America. The Ninth Circus Court has already said no to the Olympus Spa and said, nope, no, we're not going to let you do that. You're going to have biological males come in who identify as women, and yes, they will be in your spa without clothes on as well. That is now going to be appealed to the Supreme Court. I hope they take up the case. Let's go to Barbara. Hey, Barbara, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
The COVID shots. I personally didn't have the shot, and I've been perfectly healthy.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. I didn't have the shot either. I didn't take the jab either.
Yeah. I was afraid of it. rightly so, I think. But my friend, Tammy, she got... she had both shots, and she has been sick now with cancer.
Yeah,
and she was perfectly healthy before.
I'm sorry to hear that, and I've heard about some turbo cancers that appear to be associated with having taken the jab. Barbara, I wish the best for your friend, and I thank you for the call. Let's go to Richard, who's a naysayer. Hey, Richard, welcome. We love naysayers. What do you and I disagree about?
You know, the whole Fauci pleading the fifth. To me is kind of the smart thing to do. Now I could be wrong about this, but I think there's people trying to, dive into the auto pen pardons thinking that they were, illegal.
Yeah, but that's plead the fifth. Do you understand that you can only plead the fifth if it actually puts you in jeopardy of self-incrimination of a crime? Because that's what's forbidden by the Fifth Amendment. You can't be forced to implicate yourself in committing a crime. And yet, Richard, if you have a presidential pardon, is anything you say going to put you at risk of being charged with a crime if you have a pardon already?
Well, if that pardon turns out to be illegal because of the auto pen.
No, but it's not right now. So can you claim the fifth when you face no jeopardy?
Well, I could see it coming back on him if they reverse that pardon down the road.
I don't think the pardons were legit because they were signed with the auto pen. But do I think they're going to be contested and overturned because of the auto pen? I don't think that's going to happen. But even if it was, you have to take it the way it is. At this point, Anthony Fauci faces no jeopardy if he answers questions, which means he has abandoned his presidential pardon. And at this point, I think he ought to be charged with the crimes he's committed. You've got the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show. FM News 101.